This is The Takeaway. I'm Indira Lakshmanan of the Poynter Institute in This Week. Todd Zwillick is back on Monday. Thanks so much for listening. And this hour, a look at the origins of Confederate monuments and the truths and falsehoods of teaching Civil War history in this country. But we begin with a challenge to false statements coming from the highest office in the land. As of August 21st, President Trump has made 1,057 false and misleading claims since his inauguration. That's according to the Washington Post, which has been tracking public statements by the president since his inauguration. The claims cover everything from trade.
We have trade deficits with almost every country.
To job creation.
I've created over 1 million jobs since I'm president.
And they are often very easy to confirm or deny. We do not have trade deficits with almost every country. And while the economy has added 1 million jobs since Trump's inauguration, economists say it's extremely misleading to credit that number to the president himself. Glenn Kessler is a Washington Post reporter and author of the Fact Checker column. He says what started as a small project at the start of the administration has evolved into a year-long mission to bring the American public the truth. Readers can decide what to do with it.
We've been tracking this from the very beginning. It started as a 100-day project when he racked up nearly 500 misstatements or false claims. And then readers asked us to keep going, so we decided to do it for a full year.
It's been interesting to see how the Washington Post has made the decision to use the term false and misleading claims, whereas some of the networks have put the word lies into their chyrons that run along the bottom of their screen. I'm thinking of CNN. What is the rule and the reasoning that you used at the Post to decide what word to use to apply to these statements?
Well, this was a decision made at the very top levels by the top editor, Marty Baron, which was not to use the word lie. It's somewhat argumentative, and it kind of ends the discussion about what a person is saying. It's a value judgment. You know, at the Fact Checker, we have a rating scale which goes up to 4 Pinocchios. That's when you tell a whopper. But I can't find myself getting into a person's head and knowing whether or not they know what they're saying is so false that it could be qualified as a lie. I mean, in the case of Donald Trump, the president is very situational. He says things today that are often completely contradictory to what he may have said the day before, or what may be contradictory to what he'll say the next day. And we have numerous examples of flip-flops that he has made that he has never acknowledged. And I think, actually, if you put a lie detector on the president, that he might pass it because he firmly believes these things at the moment.
And, you know, you make an excellent point there, and it brings us to his Afghanistan speech just a few days ago.
In 2011, America hastily and mistakenly withdrew from Iraq. As a result, our hard-won gains slipped back into the hands of terrorist enemies. Our soldiers watched as cities they had fought for and bled to liberate and won were occupied by a terrorist group called ISIS. The vacuum we created by leaving too soon gave safe haven for ISIS to spread, to grow, recruit, and launch attacks. We cannot repeat in Afghanistan the mistake our leaders made in Iraq.
He was contradicting himself from before. He had tweeted and said publicly so many times that we shouldn't be sending more troops to Afghanistan.
You know, at some point, are they going to be there for the next 200 years? You know, at some point, what's going on? It's going to be a long time. We made a terrible mistake getting involved there in the first place. We had real brilliant thinkers that didn't know what the hell they were doing. And it's a mess.
And now he's taken a different tack. So you have fact-checked him on foreign policy, on spending.
And we've spent $6 trillion in the Middle East, according to a report that I just saw, whether it's 6 or 5, but it looks like it's 6. $6 trillion.
Tell us why that statement is wrong and also how it affects, you know, what he said just this week.
Well, the way the president uses that $6 trillion figure, he always frames it as if that is a figure as of just like the week before. I just learned we've spent $6 trillion and we could have spent this on roads. What he's doing is it's not the Middle East. He's wrapping in both Iraq and Afghanistan, which of course is in South Asia. And then is taking an estimate that includes, you know, disability costs and all sorts of costs to go all the way to 2050. So it's a it's a very inflated number, but he seems to love it because he repeats it all the time. But he acts as if there was $6 trillion worth of bridges and roads that we could have built.
Well, I want to ask you, this has really freshened people's minds because the president had this rally in Phoenix on Tuesday night, which was ostensibly about immigration. And that's one of the subjects that he has made a claim that you have fact-checked.
In fact, General Kelly, who was in charge of Homeland Security, where people coming in down 78 and almost 80%, he did so good. I made him my chief of staff, right? That made sense. John, where's John?
What does your fact check show on that?
It's a cherry-picked number that tries to put the decline in the best possible light. There's definitely a decline, but it could be as low as 8%, could be as high as maybe 50%, depending on how you do the numbers, but it's not 78%.
He also has characterized immigrants in a certain way. He has promoted the narrative that illegal immigrants are responsible for crime in the United States. And what does your fact-checking on that show?
Well, generally, the data shows you can't really draw much of a link between illegal immigrants and crime. And in particular, data indicates that immigrants, illegal or legal, tend to have lower crime rates than native-born Americans. I mean, after all, if you think about it, if you're an immigrant to the United States, you're generally trying to become part of the country and not get into trouble. It's just one of these claims he puts out there. One of the secrets of Donald Trump's support is that he says things that his supporters believe to be the truth, even if it's incorrect. So his supporters tend to believe that illegal immigration is responsible for a lot of crime. There's no data to support that, but because Donald Trump says it in a way that most politicians don't because they try to be more accurate, his supporters hear that and say, hey, look, here's a politician who's telling me the truth.
You've pointed out in the Post that the president's misstatements and untruths average 5 claims a day. And more than 30 of these misleading statements he has repeated 3 or more times. Now, I think the one that has got to take the cake here of the most repeated false claim is the one about the Affordable Care Act being dead or dying.
They run out, they say death, death, death. Well, Obamacare is death.
And on that one, I wonder to what extent he actually gets to shape the narrative. If you say it enough times, do people believe it and then think that, in fact, they no longer have health care?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the interesting thing is that during this period of 7 months where he said more than 50 times that Obamacare is dead or is a disaster or dying, support for the law has actually increased. So if his intent was to undermine support for the law, it hasn't succeeded.
That's fascinating. What about another one that he likes to repeat?
The Russia story is a total fabrication. It's just an excuse for the greatest loss in the history of American politics. That's all it is.
He's repeated that claim at least 20 times. You know, what about that? Has he convinced people or turned their opinion in the other direction?
Well, again, I think you see most polling indicates a fair amount of concern about what Russia did during the 2016 election. And see, what he does is he tries to say, you know, the evidence, there's no direct evidence yet of any collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia or Russian entities. But there is clear evidence confirmed by the heads of the intelligence committees and the FBI that Russia, under the orders of the president, President Putin, did interfere in the election with the hopes of swinging it towards Donald Trump.
If you don't catch a hacker, okay, in the act, it's very hard to say who did the hacking. With that being said, I'll go along with Russia. Could have been China. Could have been a lot of different groups.
And yet the president tries to dismiss all of that, I guess because he believes it undermines the legitimacy of his election victory.
What I think is so interesting is that you have gotten President Trump's attention with your fact-checking. He has publicly said in speeches that he doesn't like Pinocchios, which is, of course, the name that the Post has given to your grading system for untruths. Previous presidents have all earned Pinocchios before Donald Trump, but he has definitely got them beaten by now. So much winning, you'd think that he would be tired of winning. And yet it doesn't seem to change his behavior and his statements. Why?
Well, you know, it's you don't really necessarily change your behavior when you're 70 years old. You know, I covered Donald Trump when he was a businessman and I was a financial reporter in New York. And the way he handles the facts and talks about information today is very similar to the Donald Trump that I covered more than a quarter century ago.
I find it interesting that there's been a lot of research on the impact of fact-checking, whether it changes voters' minds. And the latest research seems to show that it might change someone's mind, but it rarely changes their behavior. Now, in 2016, you reported that two-thirds of the statements that you fact-checked by candidate Donald Trump were false. But, of course, we know he won anyway. So does that mean that there's some part of the population that just cannot be convinced that something is false? Or does it mean that it doesn't matter to people if someone is giving false statements?
First of all, the United States is somewhat unique in that people, when they cast their ballots for president, they seek to have some sort of personal connection with that person, and they will vote on issues that have very little to do with policy. In other countries, the elections are swung much more on policy than personality. And this was definitely a contrast of two kinds of personalities that were relatively well known to the American people, in both cases rather negatively well known. In terms of the impact of fact checking, my fact checks are really to help people become better informed about policies and policy making. What they do with the information is up to them. I'm not trying to change their vote or change their behavior. I'm not even trying to change the behavior of politicians. I'm just trying to make sure that people are better informed about complex policy issues, because often politicians talk in code and in ways that are not that understandable to the ordinary American. So if they read my column, they'll at least understand what these guys are talking about.
Glenn Kessler, the author of the Fact Checker column at The Washington Post, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper, with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.